Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Malik Hoff, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Three and one. Harrison hits it high in the air, left center field. Trout back at the wall. We are tied. Josh Harrison splashes down in left center, and the Sox have evened the game at three.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So the Sox are now three games under 500. They won yesterday. And tonight they go for the series win. And if you are the Chicago White Sox and if you're serious about getting back into the fray in the AL Central, you need a series win. And then you need to go to San Francisco and get a series win.
Yep, that's the way
and
you
that's,
do it.
That's the, it's not about... Yeah, soon enough, we'll be talking about head-to-head battles with the Twins and with the Indians, and I think Detroit's in there somewhere. You got to beat Detroit in the four games you play them, but you got to win series, basically, against everyone. You're going to pick up game. You know, if you're six back, generally speaking, in 6 weeks, you can make up that ground. That's the way you look at it in baseball. But I got to tell you, you got to start playing better, and that means winning series, period, end of story.
Yeah, that's the way it starts. You start climbing out one series at a time, and that's why tonight is a big game. It would be a big game anyway, but boy, this feels like a marquee matchup. And if you're a Chicago baseball fan, just take a step back for a second. Tonight you have an opportunity to see really intriguing matchups on both sides of town. With the Cubs against the Reds, that doesn't sound sexy until you realize Hunter Greene is throwing against the Cubs and Justin Steele. Hunter Green, one of the most exciting young pitchers in baseball, might hit triple digits. That is fun to consider. And then that will whet your appetite for Ohtani and Kopech in Anaheim for a game that the Sox really, it's a 162-game schedule. No one game stands out above the rest, but this feels like it means something more because of what you just said. You want to win a series, and Michael Kopech on the mound against Ohtani, that is must-watch TV.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's going to be a fun thing to watch. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm gonna follow the Dustin lead and stand up while watching. That way, I'm assuring myself of not getting too tired.
Well, you'll
so
be
you
pacing.
Stand there. Yeah, I will be pacing.
You'll be pacing.
So we were talking about Carlos Rodon before the break, and it was a really good question and a really good reminder because after this series with the Angels, they go to San Francisco, and Rodon has, what did you say, 15 starts?
He's made 15 starts.
He's already made 15 starts.
And he's 7-4, 2.62 ERA. He is one of the better pitchers, starting pitchers, going right now in the National League.
So I thought when the time came and the White Sox opted to let him go, I thought that they knew something that other people didn't know. That they, because he was their player, and because of what happened at the end of the year, and we saw him kind of take a step back at the end of the year, and maybe it was overuse, maybe it was injury-related, I just felt at the time, and I remember it distinctly, just feeling that what they were doing is because they knew something that no one else knew. And if they knew that there was something going on, then, of course, they couldn't match that contract. I was hoping at the time that they would get rid of Kimbrel and save some money so they could give that money to Rodon. And I felt that, you know, being on the one-year deal last year and the way he pitched, he had earned a right to stay with this team. And I wanted him to stay with the organization. And you know, he was kind of – did he get DFA'd at one point? And then he came back and they signed him to, like – what did he make last year, $3 million or something?
He signed a bargain basement deal to return to the
yes.
White Sox. And so then he had the kind
so
of
So the
year-
option was 18.
Right. They could have brought him back. Would they have had to have spent $44 million over 2 years. Was that a contract too rich for a guy that you felt like was a risk health-wise? And I think those concerns still exist because I think you're not going to judge Carlos Rodon by his first 15 starts. It's going to be his last 15 starts.
Fair.
And will he be this good in September and October the way that he wasn't last year, frankly? Because if he was, this would have been a no-brainer for the White Sox. That said, Mully, I feel like if you are consistent with everything that you say about the White Sox as an organization, then bringing back Carlos Rodon and risking to overpay someone who is your guy that you have drafted, developed, and been through a lot with, and he rewarded you last year in a way, in a big way, then I don't think anybody would have complained.
Like I said, it was a no-brainer to bring him back unless there was something that you knew with the medical that other people didn't know.
Okay.
And because he's your guy, presumably you had all that information.
Do you think that this start removes some of those concerns if you had them from the White Sox perspective?
Well, I think unfortunately for the White Sox, Lance Lynn got hurt to start the season. And there was a ton of uncertainty about what was going on with their pitching. And Dallas Keuchel wound up having to be DFA'd because he couldn't pitch. So I think that I felt early in the year like what a mistake they made. And when I was watching the first five starts of Rodon, I was like, oh, God, this is the worst case scenario. I feel better about it because they got Cueto. Whoa. I feel better. The Johnny Cueto signing and his performance has changed the White Sox. He's effectively replaced Dallas Keuchel. And when with Lynn coming back, you've effectively replaced Rodon from last year with Michael Kopech, who was in the bullpen and was used in an interesting way, but was always kind of earmarked to be eventually a starter. So I feel like they did a decent job of getting through it. But, I mean, okay, if it wasn't for Cueto.
I want to push back a little bit.
Please.
Or at least counter. I don't know that I want to give them that much credit because I don't know if it's all the scrutiny that Tony La Russa receives, I think would be split evenly between the manager and the front office if Johnny Cueto had not accidentally become so reliable. And he is accidentally in Chicago. Because this was not part of the design.
No, it wasn't.
This was not part of the offseason plan. And then all of a sudden, you look at the end of June, and Johnny Cueto has given you 6 quality starts in 9 chances. That's a pretty good percentage. And he is a guy that, as you point out correctly, has been more reliable than he has been unreliable. And he's somebody, when he takes the mound, you feel good about it. They didn't plan that.
No.
So, in effect, I'm not sure they ever did really successfully replace Carlos Rodon. The plan wasn't to go out and find Johnny Cueto on the street and have him come in and swoop in and save the day.
Listen, there are a lot of people that are checking in. You know, Mike, you're getting ahead of yourself. Rodon will be out again just like he was when you needed him at the end of the season. Have the same Rodon conversation in late August, September, and October. He starts strong and he ends weak. That's a different texter.
We plan to.
We're talking about it right now. And I think when you look at where the White Sox are, where their pitching is at, I'm not saying that Carlos Rodon would change the fortunes of this team. But the strength of the team last year was in their pitching. That's how they built up their lead and all the rest of it. And that's how they endured when they lost a lot of players, right? You got a, you know, really amazing April out of the Yerminator. But other than that, the pitching is really what led to the White Sox being the dominant team they were, especially in the division. So I didn't like seeing Rodon go, but I do believe that their idea was that Michael Kopech could step into the rotation and could be a similar weapon to what Rodon was, and they must have known something about his health that made them
Kopech pause. I think Kopech has been very sharp at times.
And the Keuchel thing is a separate thing where they had to get rid of Keuchel. They couldn't roll him out there again.
But you can't just – I don't think we can just yada, yada, yada Dallas Keuchel away because their faith in him returning to form this year was a major miscalculation.
Yes.
See, that's You're where right. I think the problem is that, yeah, I can understand why Kopech, the elevation and an ascension of him into the starting rotation makes sense if you're going to let Rodon go. And you replace essentially Michael Kopech with Kelly and Graveman in the bullpen. So you take him out of the bullpen, you supplement your bullpen, you put Kopech in the starting rotation. The flaw was probably counting on Dallas Keuchel to return to form and not being in a position to upgrade your starting rotation by removing him and with the better fifth starter.
Well,
that Carlos Rodon or Carlos Rodon's replacement would have represented.
And they signed Johnny Cueto when Lynn was down, right? They needed another starter. And mercifully, I mean, listen, Cueto was like the next guy up. There weren't a lot of guys that you could find. He's obviously an older player. He's had a great career, but you didn't know exactly what you were getting out of Johnny Cueto, and you didn't know what form he would be in. And it's been fantastic. The guy has been delightful, and it's been fun to watch Johnny Cueto starts up until yesterday when the back-to-back homer sent me to bed. But I really enjoy watching him pitch. But part of that was because they didn't have, you know, Jonathan Stever is out. It's not like they had obvious options in the minor leagues. You know, they brought up Davis Martin, and he pitched for a while. That was not by design either. I don't think they ever thought that they were going to have to start him. But they have issues with not having enough talent. They brought all the talent up. There aren't a ton of players sitting there waiting to be promoted from Charlotte. In fact, Charlotte keeps getting their heads knocked off. If you watch some of those scores,
it's not a rich farm system. Not right now.
Right.
3-1-2. But David, although Cueto wasn't planned, neither were the injuries. So the response to the unplanned was good.
Yeah.
Okay. 7-0-8. The strength of the team is still pitching. The hitting sucks. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And then 3-0-9. If they signed Rodon, they would not have signed Harrison, Graveman, or Kelly. The bullpen would be a disaster. The starters have been fine this year. Pitching not the problem. I don't think you can disagree with that necessarily, but I guess I'm just asking the question about, do you want to give them more credit for the Johnny Cueto than you do want to hold them responsible for not replacing Rodon? It's an ongoing thing. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves with Rodon because it is only 15 starts. But boy, has he been good.
Yeah.
And the White Sox have dug themselves a hole that they might have been able to avoid if they would have had more consistency everywhere in the first part of this season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, we've talked about it before. They did not bank wins early. So now that they've struggled in the part of the season where you thought they could turn things around, they don't have any built up wins. They don't, you know, they're behind or below 500. It's been a horribly underachieving year for a team that talked World Series or bust.
And for the king of handedness, Tony La Russa, you have a pitching rotation that you could use a left-handed starter of that caliber. You're very right-handed dominant, and you look at that and you think every pennant contender, every hopeful like that could benefit from having a guy that is a lefty you put out there every 5 days.
And maybe they thought they were going to get a lefty from Oakland, right? Then they were in the midst of
Chamania.
But who was signed first that they came very close to signing? There was another. Who am I thinking of? Anyway, maybe they thought they were going to make that deal. And that deal happened and they didn't. And I was really surprised when they didn't make that deal. But look, they are in a position now where they're behind and they need to win. And the next couple of weeks are going to tell the tale. Before the All-Star break, they have 11 games in 10 days against the division. By the time you hit the All-Star break, you're going to know what they are.
Huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity, and I just chuckle because the texters who are pointing out that if you had signed Rodon, you would not have been able to sign Josh Harrison. Now you're going to use Josh Harrison as the reason.
I think it's a joke. Again, you know, you brought back Leury, And then you signed a similar player in Josh Harrison, neither of whom have been very good.
It's a duplicate, and you signed two relievers that essentially are duplicates.
Yeah. So if you think about Josh Harrison, you take whatever that is, that $5 million, and you take what do they give $7 million to Kelly, and you take that money and you combine that, you could have Rodon. I mean, you're short $6 million, but you know, let's squeeze someone else out somewhere.
Yeah, that's why I think it's easy to say now. It's easy to second guess based on his start, and we will have a different conversation and feeling about it if he fades in September again like he did and something comes up and he has to skip some starts. But we're not there yet, and as we sit here at the end of June, boy, they could use a guy like that in the rotation.
312-644-6767. We should let you know that the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com.
And the BetQL network is available nationwide on the Odyssey mobile app and website. Over 10,000 home and auto-connected devices in BetQLnetwork.com.
Mike is in Orland Park. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. If I'm not mistaken, this is my opinion, the Sox are the ones that picked up Kimbrel's option, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, there's where it all started, the problem, okay? They were so hell-bent on keeping that guy and trading him for something down the road. If they wouldn't have picked up his option and is moved on, they would have had plenty of money to either sign Rodon or restructure their bullpen or so on and so forth. That's where the problem started, when they picked up his option. Then they were stuck trying to keep him. The money's gone, no Rodon, and then they got to trade him for, Pollock?
A.J. Pollock, yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure there was other outfielders they could have signed it to before that. So I'm just saying the problem started when they picked up Kimbrel's option. That's all I had to say.
Interesting point of view. So
I think that they made a bad trade for Kimbrel. It didn't work out. I think that they gave up, you know, Hoyer, who ended up blowing out his arm, but Madrigal. I think they went into the season not wanting to feel like they got pantsed in that deal, so they were going to hang on to Kimbrel and they were going to get something in return, and as it turns out, maybe they should have just hung on to Kimbrel.
Well, I don't know about that.
I don't know about it either.
I don't know about that, because then you have a reliever that wants the ninth inning, but you don't want
to
give it
now.
To him.
Yeah,
it's available now, but I don't think that Craig Kimbrel might not have started the season in a way that you would have wanted. I understood trading him, and I understood the trading for him at the time. I don't want to have revisionist history, because I thought at that point in time it was creative. It was a risk, but I thought it was the right move at the right time.
312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss. Ball gets by the catcher. Gomes picks it up. Third base side. Throws to first in time to get Farmer. Strikeout 2-3. That ends the top half of the sixth inning.
Yeah, I thought Keegan threw the ball really well. Thought he was attacking. It's been vintage him as of late, you know, throwing the ball really well. You know, we couldn't scratch some of those across early on. But did a nice job keeping us in the ball game right up there to the end.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is, of course, David Ross, and he's talking about Keegan Thompson and what was he talking about there? Thompson, the K, and I guess, you know, you think about Keegan Thompson, and we've talked about this a lot. Like, where is his future? What exactly is he? You know, when you're talking about the Cubs pitching staff, it seems like the real hopefuls are you know, Thompson and Edward Alzolay, is he out of your mind forever? Is that it? I mean, I think
this year, I think probably this year. He's maybe coming back at some point
but
in time.
Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson are a very important part of the future. And you're hoping that they're both going to be starting pitchers and they're both going to find success there. But you wonder. You wonder. And there's did you say there was a no-hitter yesterday?
Oh, yeah. A lot of interesting things last night from the Cubs beyond the 5-3 loss to the Reds. And Keegan Thompson may have deserved a little bit better.
Yeah.
He gave up 2 runs in 6 innings. Then he leaves and Rowan Wick gives up the home run and his numbers look worse than maybe they would have been. That happens. That's baseball. But Anderson Espinoza was the pitcher. You talk about young pitchers in the system developing. Anderson Espinoza, you might remember, a player by the name of Jake Marisnyk, who now is a Pittsburgh Pirate. But Jake Marisnyk was an outfielder for the Cubs last year. Part of the trade.
I totally forgot about him.
Yeah, part of the purge. He was dealt to the Padres. Anderson Espinoza was a pitcher that came back to the Cubs in return. Right-hander from the Padres, and last night for the Tennessee Smokies, he pitched a combined no-hitter. The second no-hitter for the Smokies this year. And nice to see. Good development. Not insignificant. They beat Rocket City 2-0.
Oh, my God.
Are they the Trash Pandas, by the way? The Rocket City Trash Pandas?
I don't remember.
That might be a nickname.
I don't know everyone's nickname.
Okay.
Sorry.
I don't know if I saw that.
Calls, maybe Bernsey would know.
He might know. I'm sure he might.
He was with the Rockford Lightning.
He would definitely know. So a couple other things about the Cubs game last night. Yeah, right. Dan Bernstein announced for the Rockford Lightning?
Yeah, they are the Trash Pandas.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does Dan ever talk about his days as a CBA announcer?
I don't think so. I think he keeps it under wraps
a lot.
But if you listen to him talk basketball, he will talk like a guy that had a lot of minor league instruction.
Coach Bernstein,
that's
you.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
So last night on the other side of the field in the other opposing dugout, Luis Castillo was real good.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, goes without saying. Six shutout innings, struck out 11, was dealing. What stood out to me, though, Mully, was that in this day and age of pitch conservation and watching innings and all of these things, Luis Castillo goes 6 innings. Gives up 5 hits without a run, struck out 11, as I said. But you look at his pitch count, 123 pitches.
Wow. You don't see that much anymore, do you?
Career high, 123 pitches. You're the Reds. You are 26-47 now. You are in dead last in the National League Central. You're playing the Cubs. Okay, I get it. You want to catch the Cubs because they're in fourth and you're on their heels, but 123 pitches on June 28th? It seems like
he should have had a perfect game or a no-hitter to throw that many pitches, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem like the kind of thing you're keeping a guy out there because you're trying to help him make some history?
If he's going to have 123 pitches, yeah, you think that he's working on a shutout, making some kind of history, doing something that is worth leaving him in that long. You don't see it happen around baseball very much, and I just wonder, and then you do. You second guess or you question the wisdom of that, but that's their problem.
Wisdom? We should be talking about Nico. Nico Hoerner, 3-for-4. That's his 5th consecutive multi-hit game, and he becomes the first player with such a streak for the Cubs since John Jay in September of 2017. Dustin, you're doing a Cubs podcast. Will you be having John Jay on to talk about
Fly the W?
That's a good idea. No, we haven't had him on yet. We've had several guests on, but we have not, and that would be a good suggestion.
Recently retired John Jay, I believe. I think he hung him up for good recently.
Right.
He is a terrific interview.
He is
a great clubhouse guy. And I would recommend him as a guest, so you need to get on that.
I'm writing that down. I just took the cap off my pen.
Are you – maybe have him on our show, too. Are you doing, like, Nico Hoerner appreciation shows? Have you done an emergency podcast?
We've not done an emergency on Nico. The biggest emergency podcast we did was literally – I didn't even want to hear what David Ross had to say after the Cubs had dropped 3-4 to the Pirates.
Yeah.
That was like the emergency. So we do 2 days a week. Crawley and I, who you guys know, great
yeah.
Cubs fan. I mean, Crawley is such a Cubs fan. He makes me look like a White Sox fan. I mean, this guy,
he's committed.
He is all in.
He's very enthusiastic about this podcast as well.
I've chatted with him several times at the Cubs fan convention.
Yeah. We've met him there many times. He's been out to our opening day broadcast.
Saw him out at Wrigley recently.
He's involved in a group called Club 400 that does some really good things for Cub fans out there. Something else he's done. He went out to see Fergie when the statue was unveiled. He's there. He's a season ticket holder. He's there all the time. He knows all the, you know, the good, he knows like all the ushers, and he knows like the hot dog guy and the beer guy. Like those are people to talk to. Like those guys here and ladies hear lot of things.
They know a lot of things.
And he really has his ear
off the record. Whispers, these kinds of things. Who's yelling at whom, when?
We do it twice a week. We review the series that just happened, and then we preview the series coming up. We're going to do a cross promotion one. There's one called Inside the Green Monster. So the Red Sox are coming to town, and we are going to talk to their guys that do the Red Sox podcast for Odyssey. So I'm looking forward to that one. It's been quite a while since the Red Sox were here in Chicago playing the Cubs.
Let me ask you this though, not to go too deep into the weeds here, but maybe revealing something about your personality. The emergency podcast came after they lost 3 out of 4 to the Pirates, but there was no emergency podcast after they took 2 of 3 from the Cardinals?
Oh, we did that too, but not an emergency. Oh, okay. Like at least like I let that one settle in. You know, sometimes it's a Sunday.
You wanted to hear what Rossi said on that one.
I wanted to hear what Rossi said. I wanted to digest it. I wanted to get my note. I had things to say. I wouldn't say that we went blue. I think there's only been two words said in the 12 podcasts we've done that wouldn't be allowed here on the Score. So we keep it fairly clean to that point. It's not really a skill to swear.
Did you utter both of them?
I did not, actually. I might have uttered one. I know Crowley uttered the one for sure.
Okay.
I guess it depends. It's like yesterday when we played sound that we decided to beep out and Dan decided to say on the air.
Yeah.
It was one of those kind of words. Like when in doubt, bleep it out. That's kind of the teaching.
But these podcasts, sometimes the appeal is people want to hear
their favorite
guys cuss.
Yep. That's right.
You know, they're like, please cuss
for us. It's too easy
to
just sit there and drop bombs. That doesn't take much creativity.
Not at all. I don't understand the appeal there. I really don't. Somebody needs
just to hear a guy.
I know
go
all
off.
The words, and I've used them far too often, but not really on purpose. I kind of, as I've said, you will hear language if I am, you know, riled up enough, and it's not a good thing. But I mean, I was beaten for, you know, we had our mouth washed out with soap. There was a swear jar. There were penalties that I faced. That have always made me feel, and I always say this to my kids, like, hey, use your words. Don't cuss. And they're always like, who are you talking to? Yeah, okay, cuss in anger if you have to. If you have to change a tire, then the old man's going to, you know, start talking a little blue. But really, there are significantly better ways of expressing
yourself.
Did
you ever really have your mouth washed out with soap?
Yes, definitely.
With soap?
With soap. No question about it.
I got as close to my dad took the bar and like had it right there.
No, I've had it in my mouth. I I was a young child and my brother said something to me as we were walking home from school and I laid it on him and he ran home and told my mom. And I was kind of a little bit afraid, but I didn't think it was going to be a serious thing. And I got the soap in the mouth.
Made an impression, didn't it?
Well, I no longer, you know, I started calling my brother a rat after that. I no longer trusted him to this day. No.
To this day.
That's not true. Really? No, but I did learn the hard way. I received different messages from the family when I was a kid about behavior and about different things. And I was out at a kind of a weird event one time when I was in grammar school, maybe I was 6th or 7th grade, and my brothers pulled me aside and slapped me around over being there because it was something that could have gone the wrong way. And I steered clear. I mean, really, I have been scared straight, David.
Don't you think sometimes people cuss to be cool?
Well, that's, I think sometimes.
They think it's sometimes like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it surprises
you.
Did
you hear that? That sometimes sounds really tough.
Yeah.
Just, come on. Really?
Yeah. You know, I always, Dave Feldman, he would just say, help, help. And you would hear him like, this is the old Sun-Times horse racing guy. And I said to him, Dave, why do you yell help so often? Do you really need help? And he said, some people have 4-letter words. That's mine. help. And he used it like, you know.
In place of, as a substitute. Yeah.
Instead of, you know, blank or blank, he'd say help.
Darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, something help. Like that. Okay.
It was just sort of this general side of the world. It was hysterical. I loved that. I really wish I had used it. But, yeah, no, I definitely had my mouth washed out with soap, I think, twice in my life. And believe me, you don't go for the third one.
No, you don't want to go three times in that direction. All right, you mentioned Nico Horner. I want to ask you this, you know, from a Cubs fan big picture perspective. Are you okay with the idea that Nico Horner has such a good season, the kind of season he's putting together, frankly, right now, that it prohibits you from going after some of these free agent, big name, marquee shortstops in free agency? Because that's where this all is headed. We talk about the rebuild. We talk about the next time the Cubs, you know, regain some respectability. It's going to be free agency is going to be a big part of that. And the shortstops that are available next year are even better than the ones that were available last year.
Right, including one of the big name guys who's going to opt out.
Twins. Correa, who's on fire.
Carlos Correa.
Trey Turner, who has been rumored to the Phillies. A lot of these guys are going to be out there. And Nico Horner, to his credit, came into this season, even after they had gotten Andrelton Simmons, a four-time Gold Glover winner at shortstop, and he was committed to becoming the kind of shortstop that the Cubs would feel comfortable with so they wouldn't have to go out and overspend for a guy like Trey Turner or Correa. I wonder if that will be the case in September, and I wonder if Nico Horner will establish himself as an all-star caliber shortstop the way this seems to be headed, because he has been excellent defensively, and now we see the numbers with his offensive game with all the multiple hit games.
Yeah, I don't think Nico Horner would prevent me from trying to upgrade and get the best players possible. I think Nico Horner is a keeper. I wouldn't get rid of Nico Horner, and in fact, maybe you're going to need a second baseman. Who knows how this is going to play out? You know, what's fascinating to me is we talked about Nico and Nick Madrigal in sort of the same category to start the season. Well, Nico has significantly overtaken Nick Madrigal, who has been, you know, another guy that hasn't been around and hasn't been very good when he has been around. We've seen guys like that. But to answer that question, I was told the money will be available when it's time to spend it. So hopefully that's next year, and hopefully it's on a really good, solid piece like a shortstop that you need on any team that wants to be good.
Dustin says that in the chat box he's an all-star second baseman. Why is he not an all-star shortstop in your book?
He seems to, and listen, he's had a really nice year. He's somebody we don't appreciate enough. He's been great at the plate. He's been good enough on defense. He looks like every time he throws the ball that it's taking him every bit of athletic ability. He doesn't make any plays look routine. He doesn't make any plays look easy. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I just don't know, like, eventually is he going to throw his arm out? It just seems like he's doing everything he can to get that ball over to first base before the guy busts
his rear end. Yeah, he's making the plays, but it doesn't
look
effortless.
Hard, right.
Yes.
He makes them all look hard. Now, but he's making the plays. But right now, it's not necessarily about winning games. It's about player development. And I think big picture, like, he could be the Cubs' really good second baseman on the Cubs' next really good team.
I think that's a good way to look at it, because I wouldn't want to, as much as I like everything about Nico Horner, I wouldn't want his development and the fact that he's a reliable player now to become an impediment to them going after and being aggressive.
Right.
Don't let this camouflage what could be the guy that really takes you to the next level.
And Dustin's written in the box here, better than Sandberg. That's a bit much, Dustin.
Wow.
He's getting a little over his skis.
Now that's an emergency podcast.
Yeah. I don't think I agree
better
with
than Sandberg.
That. No. Joe O is joining us next. We're going to talk to Joe. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Mully and Haw.
Man, you guys are awesome. I've been listening to you guys for years.
On 6-7 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Joe Ostrowski, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline, which is presented by Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Happy Fanny Pack Wednesday.
Hey. Guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Look at Joe.
Those guys on the bench, they had a story for years, right? The Hall of Famer, he's taking a picture of a tree. He stole a fanny pack. He ran off.
It looked like I was getting away with something.
Yeah, and maybe I was.
What if you were like tackled as a purse thief? You know,
that would have been something.
that would have been
quite a headline.
Two cops rolled up on those segways, and another guy on a horse, and I like it, Joe. I like
score
it.
Host tackled at Soldier Field.
Oh, man. You would never get tackled.
No,
score host eludes police at Soldier Field. They have your identity. All right, Joe. So Dylan Cease, is he really in the Cy Young race in the American League? Do we look at him and say that, or should it be Johnny Cueto?
Well, I was starting to think about this on Sundays after that performance because, as you know, the last couple, okay, he's gone 7 innings and 6, and that's always been the issue with Cease. We know he's going to get the strikeouts, and that's going to stand out, and it's one of those things. It's a big bullet point on the resume to win the Cy Young, and the innings pitched, the workload would always hold him back. But over the last couple games, now we're starting to see him go deep in games. So Monday morning, I checked after Sunday's performance, he's 20-1. Since then, guys, the number has moved down to 14-1 over the last couple of days, and I think that makes a lot of sense because if Cease can continue this, we know he's not going to continue what he's done over the last 6 starts. He has a 0-2-6 ERA his last 6 starts, 50 wow. strikeouts, 18 walks. But you look at Ks per 9, Cease is number 1 in baseball at 13.4. Second is McClanahan at 12.1.
Wow.
Nobody's close to him. WAR, he's top 4. ERA, he's top 7, which is around 2.5 right now. So I think that move down to 14-1 is justified. And if he can keep this up, something like, with the strikeouts, going deep in games, I think he's going to be in the mix, maybe top 3 once we get to the end of the season.
All right, Joe, tomorrow, 5 p.m. local time, NBA free agency begins. Curious to how we should look at this, where there might be money to be made. Zach LaVine, certainly unrestricted free agent. Who else is out there who might be, you know, guessing where they go?
Yeah, so you can actually bet on Zach LaVine's next team, and we all know what AK's been saying. He doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, you should certainly take note. And he's saying that Zach LaVine's going to be back. Last night, you could find Zach LaVine at -250 to return to the Bulls. And then it looks like some Bulls fans caught wind of that wager, and it's up to -500
wow.
right now.
That's
so,
yeah,
that was taking a lot of money last night. -500 implies there's an 83% chance. Woj is tweeting about it yesterday as well. As long as Woj is not tweeting about the draft, I'll believe him as far as free agency goes.
Didn't Woj say that he will like sign basically the minute you hit free agency? The thinking is that will be when Zach LaVine gets the max deal, and that's great because they've got other work to do. Are there any other players heading to the Bulls? Are there any odds out there? I haven't even thought about various names of guys, but they've got to improve somehow.
Yeah, it's not the biggest year in free agency, as we all know. When the lead story is, and he's going to get paid. Jalen Brunson keeps coming up because of all the ties to the Knicks. They hired Rick Brunson as the assistant. There's Leon Rose, the team president. He used to represent him. Now his son represents him. Derrick Rose was his mentor. So all signs point to Brunson getting over $100 million. But as far as the Bulls and Betts, I don't see anything there. But what we did see, this would be a lot of drama, and I guess I'm for that. Another reason to root against the Lakers is Windhorse was reporting that Kyrie to the Lakers is not dead. That could still happen.
There's people out there that think that him opting in makes him easier to trade because he doesn't have to do the negotiating. It will be the Nets who will do that. But I just think that's I think those are people that want this story to continue as long as possible.
What can the Lakers give the Knicks, or the Nets, I'm sorry, what could they give them? Who wants any of that collection?
Yeah, and I understand from the Lakers' perspective, you go for it. You don't waste any LeBron years. And right now, you are not a championship-level team. At least, I don't think so, not based on what we saw last year. But you have to look at it from the Nets, too. Why would you waste any KD years? Because if you move Kyrie, and you know, they're not pleased with him right now. But if you lose Kyrie, you're not going to win it. Not as strong as the East appears to be once again. And then you have other teams that are going to improve. Pat Riley was really upset at the end of the season. So you know that he's going to do something with the Heat. So I just don't see how that's a positive overall for the Nets. But you're right there. I'd love to see the drama, and I'd love to root against him, because I certainly, people would bet on that. If Kyrie goes, they'll buy into the story, back with LeBron, blah, blah, blah. No, I wouldn't be interested at all.
Quickly, Joe, tonight, Ohtani, Kopech, Sox, Angels, what do you think?
That's going to be a lot of fun. Ohtani was ridiculous his last start. 13 strikeouts, I believe one walk against the Royals, a team that historically doesn't strike out a lot. The White Sox have not seen Ohtani in a long time. Wasn't it the first week of last year? The last time we saw the Sox go against Ohtani. So you loved what you saw last night. Was it 7 of the 9 starters had a multiple hit game? Probably not going to be the same situation. So the strikeouts is where you want to look. I mean, the White Sox don't strike out a ton. So maybe Ohtani under on the strikeout prop is going to be a lot of fun. But reason enough for everyone, including you guys, to stay up late tonight.
Has Christopher Morel overtaken Seiya Suzuki?
A week ago, yes. Now they're both sliding back.
Uh-oh.
So now Suzuki is down to 20-1, right there with Jack Sawinski, local guy. And Morel has dropped down to 50-1. A week or so ago, he was about 25-1. So they're both falling back outside of the top five. The NL Rookie of the Year race is actually pretty interesting, because it took about 2 games for O'Neill Cruz to become the favorite. The guy just came up,
God.
And he goes from 30 to 20. They make the call up, hits a homer, and right now he's 4-5-1 range. Also up there is Mackenzie Gore and Spencer Strider of the Braves. Now, it's tough with these pitchers because you don't know workload is going to be. Yes, and he's fantastic.
Yeah,
tough part with pitchers. You have one bad game, and then they're going to drop in the odds. But it feels like there's a lot of momentum towards Cruz.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much, Joe. Always a delight. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
That is our guy, Joe Ostrowski. 312-644-6767. We're going to talk to Rob Schaefer from NBC Sports Chicago. We're going to find out when that clock strikes 5. What else are the Bulls doing? We know what they need. We need a rim protector. Is there a Mo Bamba in the future? Is there a Mitchell Robinson in the future? Is there nobody to protect that
rim?
What
3-point shooter is in the future?
Okay, rattle a few off. Let's find out. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Rob Schaefer next on The Score.